Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There's a plan at the State House that would add a 2 cent per ounce tax on all sugar sweetened beverages, so a 20 ounce soda would have a 40 cent tax. Backers of the plan hope to raise roughly $35 million with a new tax, and that's money they want to use for a number of health care programs and to help subsidize healthy food for low-income Vermonters. Dr. Rachel Johnson is a professor of nutrition at UVM. She says the average person consumes 45 gallons of sugar-sweetened beverages a year.
2 out of 3 adults and 1 out of 3 children in Vermont are overweight or obese, and Vermont spends an estimated $202 million a year treating obesity-related health conditions. The rising consumption of sugary drinks has been a major contributor to the obesity epidemic.
So, is imposing this tax a good idea? Will it discourage consumption of these products? And is this an appropriate role for state government? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Anthony Yarapino, who is the director of the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. They support the tax. And Jim Harrison, who's the director of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. They do not support this tax. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you here.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
Good afternoon, Bob. Thanks for having us.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Do you think this tax on sugar-sweetened beverages is a good idea? Will it discourage people from consuming these products? Is it an appropriate role for government to tax products in order to reduce consumption? Do you have concerns that perhaps the money that's raised from this tax will be used for programs other than health care? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better still, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So, Anthony, start us off. Your coalition thinks that this is the time to impose a sizable tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. Very briefly, tell us why.
Bob, sugary drinks are a significant contributor to obesity in America, particularly among kids. This is something that's been confirmed by decades of public health research, some of which have concluded that 1/5 of all the weight gained in the United States over the last 50 years is attributable to the increase in consumption of sugary drinks. That's a 400% increase in consumption of sugary drinks we've seen in this country over the last 50 years. It's the largest source of caloric intake for our children. In the 1990s, sugary drinks surpassed milk as the largest source of calories for our children. It's a larger source even than pizza. These are drinks that have zero nutritional value. They are 100% added sugar, and it's the worst form of added sugar because liquid sugar really overloads the pancreas and the liver and leads to a number of high risk factors for preventable illness like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. This is the first generation of American kids that are predicted to live shorter lives than their parents, unless we do something dramatic to curb obesity. And one of the things that we're looking at sugary drinks and a tax in particular is our experience and our successful experience in Vermont with the tobacco tax. We've seen that the tobacco tax has both been effective at curbing smoking rates, particularly among price-sensitive youth consumers, and we've seen that it has been successful in raising money to pay for education and prevention programs as well as affordable health care.
So some of our listeners might be thinking, why stop at sugar-sweetened beverages? I mean, we've got candy bars out there. We have other products that are loaded up with sugar. Why not go after all of them?
Well, first of all, there's nothing loaded up with sugar more than sugary drinks. Just to give you an idea, a 20-ounce Mountain Dew, which is these days is the single serving size, has 19 1/4 teaspoons of added sugar. Now, the American Heart Association and its scientific guidelines for healthy, to maintain good health, to reduce risks of obesity and heart disease say that adult men should have no more than 8 teaspoons of sugar per day, adult women 6 teaspoons, and kids 2 to 3 teaspoons. So one Mountain Dew is getting you almost 2 to 3 times the amount of added sugar you should have in your diet. For comparison, a Hershey's bar that you get at the store has 6 teaspoons of added sugar, and some of that comes along with dietary fiber. One of the things that the medical researchers have told us is the different about liquid sugar that we drink is it doesn't fill us up in the same way that solid foods do. When people eat a candy bar or they eat an apple or they eat something solid food that has sugar in it, people understand that they're getting filled up and that they, you know, need to eat less calories otherwise. But oftentimes people, researchers have found, will keep drinking sugary drinks time and time again, not realizing how many calories they're getting in liquid form.
So, Jim, Anthony says clear link between the sugar-sweetened beverages and the obesity epidemic that's happening in Vermont and all across the country. If that's the case, why not support this?
Well, there's a couple reasons for it. First of all, I'm not sure I buy into the direct link. Soda consumption, if you look at soda alone, is down 29% in terms of calories we get from soda in the last 15 years since they peaked in 1998. Additionally, soda consumption overall is off 26% in those same 15 years. We are a heavily taxed state, and in the view of many Vermonters, a little slow at rebounding from the recession that we just experienced. We oppose this tax on Vermont shoppers. It does nothing to help our economic well-being as a state, and as for many, it just ends up being a tax on Vermonters, and it hurts many of our small businesses. Additionally, we all know this tax is very regressive, hitting the pocketbooks of low and middle income consumers the most. So this is just the wrong direction to go. It does nothing more than send business out of state and shuffles up perhaps the prices we pay and increases the cost of food and beverages in Vermont.
Would you agree with Anthony that the tobacco tax, as it's been raised over the years, has had an impact on the purchasing of tobacco products by young people?
First of all, I think it's blatantly unfair and absolutely no comparison to talk about tobacco when we're talking about beverages. I mean, we're not, it's not even just soda. We're talking about Ocean Spray cranberry juice cocktail or some of the V8 blends. I mean, it's a whole host of items that we consume and purchase every day. Tobacco is in a category of its own. The health risks of tobacco are well documented, and we tax them both at the federal and state level. This is very, very different. We go down this path, what's next? Should we tax food items that have salt in them because someone decides that we're having too much salt and we need to create that? I was looking at a book that's written by a food psychologist, Mindless Eating by Brian Wansick. And one of the things he says is, you know, raising prices through taxes doesn't make people eat healthier. It's a food tax or sin tax, if you want to categorize it that way, isn't a stopping tax. It's a shopping tax. We're going to look for other places to purchase that. And it's well documented. We have a 6% sales tax, and one only has to go across the river to see the Vermonters that shop on the other side of the river. I can't imagine what would happen with the magnitude of the excise tax being proposed here on beverages.
We have a lot of emails, a lot of callers that want to weigh in on this issue. We got this from Dennis and Fairley. What's the threshold on the amount of sugar? Anthony wants to know what's kind of the trigger in terms of juices and other products. And he also wants to know if the tax would apply to chocolate milk, which he says he thinks is sweetened with sugar, if he's not mistaken.
Yeah, so this is a good point and a point of agreement between Jim and I, which is that we shouldn't just focus on soda, because we know some of the products Jim mentioned, there are shocking amounts of sugar. For example, Nantucket Nectar's cranberry juice is only 10% real fruit juice. The rest of that is all food coloring and added sugar. Again, more than the recommended level of the safe recommended level of added sugar from the American Heart Association. So we are talking about energy drinks. We are talking about sports drinks. We are talking about these quote-unquote fruit juice cocktails, which again are more sugar than they are actual fruit juice. And so while the consumption of soda might be down over the long term, we're seeing a major increase in the rise of sugar that's being consumed by Americans from these other drinks that would be subject to the tax. So anything with added sugar would be subject to the tax. Now, milk is an exception because we know for the health of our kids that they're unlike, you know, these other sugary drinks, which have zero nutritional value. We are getting things that kids need. Kids need calcium. They need the vitamins that are in milk. Milk is really better thought of as a food than a beverage. And it's very important for the health and development of kids that they have milk, even if that means there's a spoonful of sugar to help that medicine go down.
We also got this email from Dr. Kathleen Mahoney, who writes, although I totally agree that we need to reduce our consumption of high-calorie, nutrition-poor foods, I do not support this tax as a solution. If Vermont taxes these drinks and no one else does, will people do their shopping out of state? We can't tax ourselves out of our obesity epidemic.
Well, appreciate that perspective. You know, there's another perspective from the many, many healthcare professionals that are part of the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. We have the UVM Medical Center. We have the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, the American Academy of Pediatric Physicians. We have the Vermont Medical Society, the Dental Society, the Dental Hygienists. These are professionals who are on the front lines of the obesity epidemic. They've seen it spread. We've got great testimonial from dental hygienist Tracy Tower up in the Williston area. She's been a dental hygienist in Vermont for 24 years, and they do the education and counseling. Every time these parents and kids come into their office, they do the education and counseling, but they're coming in time and again with sippy cups filled with sugary drinks. And they wonder why kids are being sent at a cost of $2.5 million a year in Vermont. We're sending about 400 kids to hospitals to have their teeth removed because they're drinking too many sugary drinks and suffering from tooth decay. So it's not just obesity. So doctors can disagree about that. But if you look at all the major organizations of healthcare professionals in this state, they're in agreement with us. They've tried to counsel their patients. They understand that education alone is not going to solve this problem. They've seen the success of the tobacco tax over the years, and they think that this is the right way to go for sugary drinks. I do just want to respond to what Jim said, and I'd be very pleased to provide him with the stacks and stacks of peer-reviewed studies from the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Lancet, the famous British scientific journal. There are plenty of studies that are that link increased consumption, overconsumption of sugary beverages to obesity and increased risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. In fact, the Vermont Department of Health has said for those consuming three or more sugary beverages a day, you are significantly increasing your risk of obesity.
So, Jim, we got this email from Kelly who wrote, I support this tax. As a social worker, I see the effects of poor nutrition on physical and mental health every day. This is a small but important step to both prevent these illnesses and to help pay for their treatment and prevention. What do you say to that person?
Well, you know, first of all, we all need to take some responsibility for what we consume, whether it's in food, whether it's in beverage, and we need to have balance, and we need to have exercise. Sometimes that's part of the equation gets totally lost. Weight gain is very simple. It's calories in and calories out, and many of us do not look at that enough to kind of figure out what the best way to do is. I'm not sitting here saying that we should all drink more sugary drinks. We should look at what's right for us. And trying to legislate that through taxes is not going to work. This is a social experiment. No other state has done anything like this. What we're going to do is send business out of state, and none of the other surrounding states do anything anywhere remotely close to this. with beverages. I'll give you just a quick example, just to show you how real taxes do influence where people shop. 2 years ago, the legislature needed some more money for roads and bridges. They increased Vermont's gas tax. At that time, the gas tax was 13 cents more per gallon than it was in neighboring New Hampshire. Within months, 4 gas stations in the Connecticut River Valley on the Vermont side closed. Not because we were consuming less gasoline, but because it was easier for folks on the border to go across to neighboring New Hampshire. So if the goal is to decrease usage, then this is the wrong way to do it. It's taxes. You know, if I go back to Dr. Wancic, another quote in his book, we cannot legislate or tax people into eating Brussels sprouts. And that is so true. We need to take responsibility for our own actions, not trying to tax certain things because we know best here in Montpelier.
A lot of people want to talk about this issue today, so let's start off with Paula, who's calling from Enosburg Falls. Hi, Paula. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. My concern was to talk about the role of advertising in this issue. I remember last year the issue, this bill came up, and I remember seeing full-page color ads every day in my local paper against taxing sugary drinks, which pointed out to me that this is a huge industry that makes lots and lots of money, and we are, beset with advertisements for all these drinks all over the place in our daily lives. And I think people don't really realize what's in these drinks. They're so popular, and the sizes are getting bigger and bigger. When I was a kid in the 50s, it was an 8-ounce can of Coke and a bottle of Coke, and 12 ounces was big. Now that's looked at as small. So people are really swayed by advertising, and they don't realize that there's, 19 teaspoons that they're pouring down their kid's throat when they're buying a Mountain Dew. I have this wonderful poster that shows all the drinks and how much sugar is, and these energy drinks. I mean, you go into a Quick Stop, and there's a whole wall of drinks of all kinds, and they all have tons of sugar in. And I almost would like to have warning posters up saying what how much sugar is in each drink, and we don't have that. So I think people aren't well informed enough, and I think a tax does raise consciousness, just as it did with tobacco. And I think it's an excellent idea.
We just need
to re-educate ourselves about.
All right, Paula, thanks very much. Jim, is one of the reasons that the American Beverage Association, I think they're the organization that are running these full-page ads in some of the newspapers, is one of the reasons they're so interested in this, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Vermont would be the first state, so they see this as sort of opening the door across the country to this kind of tax?
I don't know what the motivation of the American Beverage Association is, but clearly, no business, no industry likes to see their product increased in tax that increases the price to their consumers. I think, again, we have a responsibility. Calorie counts are front and center on almost every consumer food product packaging that's required by FDA. The industry has worked with FDA to make them even more prominent, the front of the label, et cetera. And I think that's something we all have to pay attention to. Some of us have too many calories in our diet, and we need to look at that and try to figure out balance. But trying to do that via tax policy, to me, is just the wrong way to go. It's going to hurt retailers. It's going to hurt restaurants. Just to give you a quick example, I became privy to a local hamburger place, burger place, that did the calculation. And if everything stayed the same, their cost of product, because of the tax coming in the door, was going to increase by $51,000 annually. So they either have to increase, if nothing changed,
pass that along to...
They would have to. No business can afford that kind of cost increase without trying to get it back. Well, their customers pay the increased prices. So if they don't, that means at the end of the day, less jobs, viability of that business in question, their life savings are at risk. Is that what we want to go? And we don't even know what it does at the end of the day.
Today on the program, we're looking at a plan at the State House that would add a 2 cent per ounce tax on all sugar sweetened beverages. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at a plan at the State House that would add a 2 cent per ounce tax on all sugar sweetened beverages. Our guest today, Jim Harrison, who's the director of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Also, Anthony Yarapino, who's director of the Alliance for Healthier Vermont. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. A lot of folks would like to weigh in on this. Let's see if we can get a number of people on the air for the rest of the program. And let's start off with Andrew, who's calling from Plattsburgh. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, great to be on. I was on the show many months ago with the same issues, so I fear I'm repeating myself, but it bears repeating. Nobody cares what these drinks cost except whoever's making the profit off of them, because people will buy a 20-ounce or whatever it is in a store or a 12-ounce in a restaurant for $2 or $3, and they can buy a 2-liter, which is two quarts, half a gallon for 99 cents. So nobody cares what this thing costs when they're buying it. The money they may save by going to New Hampshire to buy less expensive gas, they'll just blow on one of these sugary drinks. I think the tax should be implemented. As well, there should be a 25-cent deposit tax on the vessel, on the container. I think that should extend, getting off topic here, but to soup cans, milk jugs, everything. This stuff ends up littering the highways. People drink their Mountain Dew, their sports drink, whatever drink it is, even orange juice is an extracted sugar. Way too many calories.
So Andrew, let me ask you this question. That 99-cent 2-liter bottle will all of a sudden would have a tax if I can do it fast enough. It could be over a dollar for the tax for that, doubling the price of the product. You don't think that would have an impact on the consumers?
No. They'll buy it anyways. People would rather buy Mountain Dew than put heating oil in their oil tank because they'll wait for the government to supplement it. How are these people being moved around in hospitals when they weigh 250, 300 pounds by poor nurses that are breaking their backs lifting obese people whose legs are as big as people's waists because they've been drinking these drinks? And not everybody gets fat from it. I've got guys that work for me. I'm an employer. I've got guys that guzzle this stuff all day long, and they're skinny as could be. Some people have the metabolism to make it disappear. But it's just pure junk food, and this industry is loving it, selling these drinks for whatever price.
Okay. Andrew, we really appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Diane, who's calling from Chelsea. Hi, Diane. What's on your mind today?
I'd like to know what role the artificial sweeteners play in all this.
Oh, that's a great question.
Is diet beverage going to be taxed also?
Anthony, what about diet colas, diet everything?
Sure, Bob. So the research is very clear that sugar-added drinks, drinks with added sugar in them, are a major contributor to the obesity epidemic. Okay, there is not a scientific consensus on artificial sweeteners. Actually, the bulk of the research shows in terms of obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, that the artificial sweeteners aren't playing a role. However, I recognize that that is an open debate, and that's why we welcome the debate at the State House. There are some legislators who've been expressed concern about artificial sweeteners. Let's have that debate, but let's not let that stand in the way of dealing with, we know, what is an established problem, and that's the sugary drinks. If we go back a couple of callers, Bob, there's some things I want to respond to that Jim said and the earlier caller in terms of the advertising that we're seeing against this tax. You know, I agree with Jim in terms of what the option of this, burger place, the unnamed burger place that he's mentioned, they would pass that on to their consumers. And that's the whole point, that the tax will be passed on to consumers. It will raise the price of these items and encourage them to make healthier choices. So there's not just an opportunity for the consumer, but businesses have an opportunity too. There are plenty of things like water, milk, 100% fruit juice, which doctors say, though it has sugar in it, there are other important nutrients, coffee, tea. There are other options that you can sell to your consumers that wouldn't be subject to the tax and would be a win-win, because that's a healthier thing for the state and it wouldn't necessarily have to affect the bottom line of the business. One of the reasons that the American Beverage Association is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on ads, they spent almost $500,000 last time to defeat this tax, is because they know that it will work. This is not an experimental idea. This is an idea based on their own economics. If you make a product more expensive, and I can't agree with the caller who said that, we know if you make a product more expensive, people will buy less of it. If you make a product cheaper, people will buy more of it. So they're spending money on advertising to defeat the tax because they know it works. We're seeing in the nation of Mexico right now, which in January did pass a tax on this, they're seeing a 10% decrease in the cost of taxed items, the sugary drinks, the unhealthy options. At the same time, they're seeing an increase in sales of the healthier options that aren't taxed. So it really shows that both beverage manufacturers and our grocers, if they're innovative in what they offer to their consumers, that there is an opportunity here to still have a healthy business climate and have a healthy population, because we have to consider the impact on all businesses. You had Rachel Johnson on at the beginning of the program talking about the $200 million that we're spending each year in Vermont just on adult health care costs related to obesity. And that number is going to skyrocket unless we do something different and do it soon. So we can't afford as a state not to act. We can't afford not to follow the proven model we have with the tobacco tax, the promising results we're seeing with the sugary drinks tax in Mexico. We can't afford not to try something new.
Let's just take a moment so our listeners understand how this tax is going to be imposed. Now, with the tobacco tax, you go to buy a pack of cigarettes, and there's a tax per pack. It's very clear. The linkage is the product costs more because the tax is whatever it is per pack. But Jim, this is a little different. This is not like putting a sales tax on a sugar-sweetened beverage. Will consumers actually see the tax increase? It gets a little complicated.
It gets very complicated. It's a hidden tax. That's why we don't like excise taxes, because they're hidden from the consumer. At least a sales tax, and we can disagree about sales tax, but at least a sales tax is transparent and readily available. There's a couple of additional complications. I would just go back a minute and disagree with something that Anthony said about Mexico. First of all, Mexico adopted a quarter of 1 cent equivalent tax per ounce, as opposed to what's being proposed here is 8 times that. Also, what's being proposed here is 10 times what our current Vermont excise tax is for beer. So this is huge, and it will have impact as to where people shop. And unfortunately, very selfishly for Vermont retailers, that means New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and New York.
Let's talk about the border. I haven't had a chance to address that border issue yet, and it's an important point that Jim is raising.
Just before we get to the border, I want to make sure people understand the imposition of this tax being done.
It's done at the wholesale
level. At the wholesale level. So, Anthony, we could have a very large retailer, big grocery store, pays that tax and decides they don't want to attach that tax to the price of the product, so they spread it out over all their other products because it's kind of a loss leader. They want to make sure that people coming in and buying the sugar-sweetened beverages don't get hit by this extra money. So, in effect, if a large retailer does that take away your basic argument that it's a higher price that will discourage consumption?
Well, it's the same argument we heard with the tobacco tax, which is an excise tax. It's not a sales tax. It's the same model that
we have both.
Well, we're trying to follow the excise tax model, which is a successful model. And I think this is the same argument that was opponents made, and it just hasn't proven out to be true that they spread the cost. I mean, Jim does represent some of the largest retailers like Walmart, like Shaw's, like Walgreens, like Price Chopper. And I think if you talk to people who are in the retail business, they understand that they do business with a lot of different suppliers. And if I was a supplier of food products that have nothing to do with sugary drinks, and I found out that my retail outlets were making the cost of my products more expensive so that they could sell more sugary drinks, which is manufactured by a different manufacturer, I think that would get real complicated real quick. And I think it ignores the reality that prices aren't stable in these other items. The prices fluctuate. And, it's very possible that you would really disrupt your overall business model. But, again, the argument that's being made, what's a little confusing to me about the opponent's argument is they're saying on the one hand, as Jim said earlier, businesses are going to pass this on to the consumers. And on the other hand, they're going to spread it all across the board and no one's going to notice it. So it seems very inconsistent to be making both arguments. But, this is why they're fighting so hard against it, because they know it will work. And going back to the point Jim made about personal responsibility, I agree entirely that personal responsibility is part of every health equation. But when we have an epidemic, and that's what we have with obesity in this country and in the state, and type 2 diabetes and heart disease, and when the government is paying millions, tens of millions of dollars a year, $57 million in the Medicaid program alone, the government has a responsibility to all its people to do what it can to protect public safety and public health and welfare. We saw in this state that we passed a ban on texting and driving, okay? That's a smart thing to do because lives are at stake. But here with sugary drinks and obesity, we know the costs are higher and more lives are at stake because of heart disease, forms of cancer that are related to obesity, type 2 diabetes. So the government has a role in protecting people's health and safety. It's the same role that they play with tobacco. That's all we're looking to emulate here.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Peter in Cambridge. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the program.
Hello, this is Peter.
Yes, Peter, you're on the air.
Okay, first off, Jim Harrison represents business interests and not the well-being of Vermonters. The second is the cost to drive out of state would wipe out any savings to buy cheaper beverages. Also, who pays when someone poor makes poor choices about their health? Another issue, maybe make it 1 cent rather than two. A $51,000 increase in the cost of a restaurant, we have no comparison to what their actual profit is or how that's going to affect that particular store. Another thing is that convenience stores prey on convenience, and that people, yes, they can be self-informed, but most people are not that self-informed. So I really take an exception to the fact that Jim Harrison is involved with people who are out to make profit on people who are maybe not making the best choices. So those are my statements. Make the tax happen. Thanks.
I appreciate that sentiment. I guess I'm the big bad business lobbyist here, but let me just offer a couple of things of perspective. First of all, most of our members are smaller independent stores, and they have their life savings. They're 7 day a week operations, and we do are very sensitive to their livelihood and what they're trying to do and serve their communities. So are we sensitive to it? Yes, we are, and I plead guilty to that every time. And I hope at the end of the day, at the end of the legislation session, that we as a public body over there don't do things that harm their livelihood, and we want to see them grow and survive in today's.
But we want to see that too, Jim, though. That's the thing, and that's what the Mexico example teaches us, is that if the industry adapts and the industry innovates and the industry, whether it be your Walmart you represent or whether it be the small local grocery stores that I know you also represent, there are other healthier beverages that you can sell them and still make a profit on those healthier beverages. I mean, of course, the best choice that people can make for their, regardless of what income level they have, the best choice they can make for health and the best choice that they can make for their own pocketbook is to drink the clean water that comes out of our taps in Vermont. We're very lucky here in Vermont that we have clean water. We have a healthy alternative at home. We also have milk. And if people were to drink more milk and your grocers were to sell more milk, that would be a win for public health, but it'd also be a win for our dairy economy. So there are options here.
If I could just interject something, you know, let's face it. This is to raise money. This is to feed our budget at the state level. And it also sounds a little bit like, who is it, Jonathan Gruber in our healthcare debate? The public doesn't know any better, so we're going to help.
Well,
we disagree.
What we've heard today is certainly the kind of debate that's taking place at the State House. It certainly is an issue we'll be following in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to our panel today, Jim Harrison and also Anthony Iarapino. We appreciate you coming by.
Thanks for the time, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Coming up next, I'll talk with Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau about several health issues being debated at the State House. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In his budget address at the start of the session, Governor Peter Shumlin proposed a small payroll tax to provide new revenue that would be used to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates that are paid to healthcare providers. The governor says the goal is to lower the so-called cost shift that takes place when the government underfunds the Medicaid program, and the remaining costs are then shifted over to private health insurance premiums. So how is this plan being received at the State House? That's one of the questions we have today for our guest, Neil Goswami, who is bureau chief at the Vermont Press Bureau. They provide news coverage to the Rutland Herald and the Barry Montpelier Times-Argus. Neil, great to have you here.
It's good to be here.
So, Neil, the governor's plan would impose a 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses. He argues that this expense will be offset by lower health care premiums for those companies that currently offer health insurance coverage to their employees. How is this whole concept doing over at the State House?
It was initially received with a lot of skepticism, and I have to say it hasn't improved much in the ensuing weeks. As you mentioned, it's a 0.7% payroll tax. That draws down about $90 million annually from Vermont businesses, draws down $100 million or so from the federal government. And they want to use $140 million of that to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates and also cover the new enrollees on Medicaid that came in under the expansion of the program under the Affordable Care Act. The problem is nobody likes the payroll tax, at least outwardly at this point. Nobody seems to have another idea of how to come up with funding to boost Medicaid payments and cover the new enrollees. So we've got a little bit of a problem on our hands. The governor wants to raise Medicaid reimbursement rates from 60% of costs right now to about 80%, which is the Medicare level. And even if he doesn't do that, even if he just tries to find money to cover the newly expanded Medicaid program in Vermont, he needs between $15 and $20 million. And that's without boosting the 60% rate. And it probably actually brings it down from 60% a little bit because of the expansion. So nobody's come up with an alternate proposal that passes the smell test at this point. Republicans have pitched the idea of maybe doing away with Vermont Health Connect and using the money that the state would use to operate that to put toward Medicaid. That's a drop in the bucket, according to the administration, and doesn't go nearly far enough in finding enough money to do what they want to do.
Would it be fair to say that there seems to be some support for increasing the Medicaid reimbursement rate and there's support for the expanded Medicaid program, but nobody wants to pay for it?
That's exactly the situation right now. Everybody knows that there's a problem for Medicaid patients getting in to see doctors because doctors don't want to see them for the low reimbursement rate. And everyone knows that we've expanded the Medicaid rolls in Vermont, and they need to be paid. That needs to be paid for. But nobody wants to put up the money to do it.
So the governor says, yeah, it's a tax increase, but that increase is going to be offset for companies that currently offer health insurance to their employees. There are some people in the State House who seem to think maybe that link isn't so clear.
Yeah, and so the idea of the cost shift is because only 60% of costs are covered by Medicaid payments, private insurance makes up the difference. So the administration's argument is if they put $140 million toward Medicaid reimbursements, boosting them, essentially that if it was a one-to-one ratio where every dollar you put into Medicaid was $1 off of private premiums, they say that's an 8% reduction in private premiums. And then they said, well, there's going to be – it's not exactly one-for-one, so we'll go with a conservative estimate of 5%. So they're promising – a 5% reduction in private premiums, or at least a 5% slowing of the growth in private premiums. It may not actually be a reduction. And people are looking at that those numbers and saying, we don't really think that's going to happen. That might be too ambitious.
Do you think some people are looking at this, as you mentioned, it's a 0.7% payroll tax. Mm-hmm. Are there some people looking at this and saying, yeah, it's 0.7% this year,
right,
but next year it's going to be a full percent? Who knows what it's going to be after that?
I think that's always a fear whenever lawmakers or the administration is talking about a tax. You know, there's one proposal this year, but 0.7 might become 1 and then 2 and then 3, and who knows, you know, 15 years down the road what this payroll tax grows into. That's always a fear among lawmakers, I think. And they also, if you look back historically, they tend to grab money where they can. So, you know, right now it's for Medicaid. You know, who knows where the expansion leads to in the future if they want to try and, you know, boost the payroll tax for some other purpose.
You were saying how reluctant a lot of lawmakers are to impose this new tax. But in the end, do they have to do something?
They do have to do something about the Medicaid expansion. That has to be paid for. We have, as a state, signed up tens of thousands of new people on Medicaid, and that needs to be paid for. You know, if they go to the doctor, their rates, you know, those rates need to be paid through the state. You know, we've signed them up as a state, and now we have to pay for it. So even if you don't boost the rates, you still have to find that $15 to $20 million somewhere in the budget to cover it.
Let's look at another health issue at the State House. That's Vermont's childhood immunization law. With the national outbreak of measles, once again, there's a tension on Vermont's exemptions to the law. Vermont has three exemptions: for medical reasons, on religious grounds, and for philosophical beliefs. According to the latest report from the Vermont Health Department, the parents of roughly 6% of all kindergarten students in the state have used the philosophical exemption for at least one of the five mandatory vaccinations. There was a really heated debate over this issue in 2012. Are we on the verge of another one?
Some people are trying to make sure we are. Senator Kevin Mullen from Rutland County has introduced a bill that would repeal the philosophical exemption. And that, by the way, is the majority of the exemptions that parents use, more so than the religious or medical. The problem is there are a lot of folks who do not want to be told that they have to vaccinate their children. And as you recall from 2 years ago, they came out in force and they convinced the House not to follow the Senate's lead and pass, you know, getting rid of the philosophical exemption. So at this point, it could be that we're going to see another showdown. I would imagine those against being forced to vaccinate their children will be back if this bill gets anywhere. The new wrinkle, however, is that the Vermont NEA, the state's largest union, has come out on the other side of the issue, and they do hold some political sway in the State House. So you could have some big forces colliding here. And I'll be honest, I don't know where it's going to go.
So many supporters of the current exemption system say this is an issue of parental rights, that parents, not the state, have the right to decide if their children are going to be immunized. It turned out to be a very powerful argument in 2012 when the House rejected Senator Mullen's bill. Is that going to be a key factor this year as well?
It probably is. You know, there's the governor even seemed to struggle a bit with this, you know, coming out and saying that vaccinating your kids is the right thing to do and everyone should be vaccinated. You know, that can be vaccinated. But at the same time, he's trying to balance the parental rights that, you know, folks think that they should have. It really also is a public health issue. The higher the unvaccinated rate goes, the more risk there is to everyone involved. And you lose that, what they call the community herd, you know, and disease can spread much more quickly and much more rapidly. So I think you have it really boils down to whether lawmakers see this more as a parents' rights issue or a public health issue. And who knows where they come down on that and how high the unvaccinated rate needs to get before lawmakers say we need to make sure that this doesn't get any higher and, in fact, goes down.
So we mentioned the national measles outbreak. It's gone to 17 states. It's in New York State. How do you think the debate would change if we have cases of measles in Vermont in the next month or two?
I think that's a real game changer. You know, if you have a case of measles in a Vermont school, I think that lawmakers need to look at this more on the public health side of things rather than the parental rights side of things.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
Indeed.
Neil Goswami is Bureau Chief of the Vermont Press Bureau. Neil, many thanks for being here on the program
today.
My
pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That is our program for today, Monday on Vermont Edition. Are you sick of the snow yet? Because we've probably got another 6 weeks of winter, we're going to provide some tips on embracing the white stuff. You'll learn about winter sports you can enjoy, how to safely navigate the roads, and other things that will help you get through to spring. Send your ideas to VermontEdition at vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Sangari. We have production assistance from Devin Karambulis. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.